Good afternoon. Welcome to the Fontenelle Final Bell here on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. We're broadcasting today from the Nebraska State FFA Convention, number 95 for the State FFA, taking place here in Lincoln. Lots of kids, lots of excitement, a lot of positive attitudes about where they see the future of agriculture going. Well, we've got some interesting aspects we're going to look at on this trade today, especially with this Black Sea-Russian talk going on. Well, are they putting a limit on it? Who's leaving, and does that make the market nervous going forward? Flip the coin, and we've got China back in doing a lot of buying on the grains, and we'll look at expectations, if I can get the word spit out, for what we see in this Friday's planning intentions report. Lots of things that we got to look at today as Arlen Suderman joins us. Arlen is with StoneX, and I guess, Arlen, we got to talk about this global influence and pressure that we're seeing on the trade. Let's start with the Black Sea region and Russia.
Yeah, some interesting developments there. And keep in mind that the backdrop for this is that the major speculative funds had built some massive short positions in the wheat market, just really bearish the wheat. So we call those short positions. And the news that's come out here in the last few days has really kind of made them nervous. And so while it hasn't made them want to necessarily build ownership of the wheat market, they certainly have been unwinding many of the short positions. And that's given us a nice rally. A couple of those things. First of all, we had reports that Cargill and Viterra are both no longer going to be elevating wheat out of Russia for the 23-24 marketing year, which starts in June this summer, early this summer. This is kind of not really a surprise, but making expectations kind of official. Russia's been trying to put pressure on American companies and really foreign companies doing business there, and their major, you know, their state-owned exporters want to be able to control the export market of what goes out of Russia. While the state-run exporters say, you know, we're going to continue to use the facilities, we're going to continue to move grain out, this shouldn't affect what comes out of Russia at all. If you're a major fund who is short the wheat market, that's going to make you nervous. Throw into there the fact that we started hearing rumors late last week, really, that Russia was going to put a floor under the price, that they wouldn't sell any wheat under a set floor, maybe $275 a ton, for example. And this week we're actually seeing evidence of that. Turkey had a major tender for wheat, and they're one of Russia's best customers. And offers out of Russia were simply missing below 270, in fact, below 275. And in fact, now they're not accepting bids below 280, 285, maybe even 290. Again, that doesn't make sense. That actually hurts Russian farmers more than it helps them. But if you're a major fund manager and you're short the market, it's going to make you nervous. So that's been behind a lot of the short covering we've had in wheat. And it does put more focus on the southwestern U.S. plains and the problems there, as well as the heavy snowpack in the northern plains. But we also noticed today that short covering kind of ran out of gas. And so now the next question is, what's going to make the funds actually build ownership? So this is going to be an interesting one to follow.
You know, I just saw some video, and I shared it on my Twitter page if folks wanted to go check it out. Folks in the southern part of Texas and that winter wheat crop not coming out of dormancy, and just looks like from the video, I mean, they're disking it up. So that's that pressure you're talking about that we're going to continue to see, hopefully not move too far northward, but again, the pressure is sitting there.
Yeah, and really the wheat crop in the southwestern plains is horrible right now. If you go, for example, much of the western half of Kansas hasn't had anything more, hasn't had a half inch or more of rainfall event since last July. Just terribly dry. And the worst of the drought is really in western Kansas. Not to say that it's not bad in Oklahoma and Texas, but it's most intense as you get up into Kansas. So they've had like 7 or 8 major dust storms since the turn of the calendar year. A lot of those farmers really didn't want to see this wheat crop salvaged so that they could go ahead and destroy it and get their insurance claim and then maybe get the rains come by the spring so they could put something else in. And we're getting to the point now where insurance agents are able to start adjusting that wheat and zeroing it out in Texas and parts of Oklahoma, particularly maybe the Panhandle area. And I anticipate we're going to see a lot more of that here in the weeks ahead.
So then what type of pressure, Arlen, do you see that putting on corn and beans as they look to find a different crop to grow with this wheat gone?
No, the thing is, they still got to turn the moisture situation around in order to plant some. And that's still a big unknown. That's going to be the last area to really see the change in the weather pattern. And right now, the corn market seems to be focused more on the new demand we're getting out of China, which has been providing support there, particularly in light of now seeing expectations that Ukraine's going to have half the crop they did pre-war. Argentina looks like they're going to have about 60% of a normal crop, and Brazil's crop went in late. So there's starting to be some nervousness in this corn market now, and we'll have to see if we get any surprises out of the stocks report coming up on Friday. China, for one, is one customer is getting nervous and really starting to buy a lot of corn. They've bought about 3 million metric tons of corn here over the last two-plus weeks.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about what's going on with China. We'll look at what they're seeing within their market trade. And, of course, talk about this whole weather situation, not only here in the States, but what we're seeing globally, what kind of pressure that's going to put. And latest weather front showing a storm system that is going to be moving back through the Dakotas again. What type of influence is that going to have when it comes to our livestock, which we know have had to deal with a lot this year, especially now that we're into calving season? More is coming up from the Nebraska State FFA Convention. It's a Fontenelle Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.
Welcome to the Fontenelle Feature. I'm Joe Gangwish, FSR with Fontenelle Hybrids. We're going to visit with Bob Wiseman. He's a Fontenelle Hybrids dealer in the Hershey, Nebraska area. So, Bob, tell us what you enjoy most about working with Fontenelle Hybrids.
I would say it's the relationships that we've built with our FSRs and agronomy guys, just the knowledge that's out there, and any questions, people are readily available to answer and help you out.
And being a dealer for Fontenelle, what's been the most rewarding aspect for you?
Finding the products that fit a producer's needs and watching them succeed.
And what makes Fontenelle stand out among other local seed brands?
I would say it's probably our large selection of quality hybrids to fit all maturities, and then the abundance of varieties with and without traits to fit everybody's needs.
For more about us, you can visit Bob Wiseman there in the Hershey area, any of our Fontenelle dealers across the state of Nebraska, or go to Fontenelle.com.
Once again to the Fontenelle Final Bell here on the Rural Radio Network. We are broadcasting from the Nebraska State FFA Convention that is underway at the Pinnacle Bank Arena in Lincoln. Arlen Suderman continues to join us with StoneX. And, of course, Arlen, this is a busy time for these kids as many of them look for a future that's bright in agriculture. But they also are closely watching what happens in the markets, and had a great discussion with a kid from and I'm forgetting the name of the chapter, but we were talking about China and what he was seeing as the global influence. And he thought that this pressure with them and their buying was going to continue to pick up and maybe put some future pressure on what we see in this crop going in the ground. What's your spin?
Things we're seeing in China right now is feeding margins are very poor for the hog industry. And their economy is really struggling to rebound, not rebounding as quickly as what we had anticipated. Getting a lot of mixed signals overall, and there's a lot of different factors involved here, but overall their feeding margins are still poor. And so we're seeing a drop in demand, and one of the best ways to measure that demand is in weekly crush, soybean crush, because that tells us what soy meal demand is. And as soy meal demand goes, so goes corn demand a lot of times in the hog industry as well. And normally we'd want to be crushed, see China crushing about 2.1 million metric tons per week right now, but they're crushing about 1.5 million metric tons. Part of that is because of reduction in numbers. Part of that is because they're reducing the amount of soy meal included in the ration. So it's a combination of factors. But And overall, as a result, what we're expecting, and African swine fever is kind of rearing its head and creating some problems, particularly in northern parts of China as well. And that's going to also reduce the numbers. particularly as we go through the summer months. But one of the things we're seeing is China is being very aggressive right now in buying corn and buying soybeans. The corn they're buying from us because we got the cheapest supply of corn right now. The soybeans they're buying from Brazil because Brazil has the cheapest supply of beans right now. For example, last week they bought another 24 cargoes of soybeans, according to our cash sources in China, and just continuing that, you know, aggressive buying. They bought about 3 million metric tons of corn from us over the last two-plus weeks and continue to buy on almost a daily basis. In reality, they may have bought a lot of this several weeks ago, and they're reporting it to USDA as they line up the freight for it. So why are they doing that? And this goes to what I kind of expected a few months back, that if we get a price break, which I expected to happen, that they would come in and be fairly active in buying in order to rebuild their reserves, particularly with tensions with the United States building up right now. They don't know how long that door is going to be open for them to buy what they need from the United States. And with some of the production problems that we're seeing overseas, whether it be Argentine soybeans or whether it be corn in Ukraine and Argentina, they want to make sure they get a supply. And so it looks like they're buying and taking shipment and getting it into their reserves right now. And that's supporting the demand side of the balance sheet.
Do you have any thoughts on this Friday's prospective planning report?
Yeah, I'm probably a little bit higher on the corn side than a lot of people, and even on the soybean side, although when I saw the average trade guesses come out, a lot of people in the average in the trade were similar to me on soybeans. I'm at 88.5 million acres of soybeans, so that would be up about a million acres from last year. On corn, I'm up about 3.4 million acres, up around 92 million acres, so that combined, that gets us back up a little above 180 million between the two of them, and that's typically where we were until last year or two, and I think we get back to that. Most of that growth in acreage, I'm expecting to come out of the south, where we're going to lose quite a few cotton acres, as well as out of the plains. Now, if the rains come, we should be able to see some more corn and soybeans go in the central plains. We'll see some more in Texas as well, but also in the northern plains, weather permitting, and that's going to be the big question mark. We should see a lot more corn and some soybeans in that area, particularly in the Red River Valley. The corn really pencils out well, and there's a lot of farmers who really want to be able to get back to corn. That may be a problem considering the depth of the snowpack in that area right now. If you look at how heavy the snowpack is, and right now the National Weather Service estimates that a lot of that snow has 10-plus inches of rainfall equivalent in it as well. So a lot of water, a lot of snow melt needs to happen, a lot of flooding is likely, and frankly, a lot more in the forecast here over the next week, additional snow for that area.
Not what they need right now. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you, Arlen?
At StoneX.com or over on Twitter, Arlen, A-R-L-A-N-F-F-101.
And that is today's Fontenelle Final Bell, being brought to you by Fontenelle Hybrids and all your local dealers. As we remind you, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. And that has been the Wednesday version of the Fontenelle Final Bell right here on the Rural Radio Network.